Court will proceed to the fifth case of the day, the United States versus Peterson. Mr. Hessler?
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Daniel Hessler. I represent Holly Peterson. The essence of this appeal is that an argument was made in aggravation. That argument actually affected Mr. Peterson's sentence negatively, and Mr. Peterson had no knowledge that the argument had been made at the time that he had the opportunity to respond. I'd start out by pointing out that the prior cases about secret recommendations, including this circuit's Heilprin, it's 20 years old, but they may not be applicable at all here. There's an initial question as to whether a justification for a sentence, which is really the issue here.
You're not contending that there were facts in this confidential portion of the PSR that weren't known to counsel.
I have no idea, but I have no reason to believe that.
But that's not the basis. It's not the basis of your.
The problem is that there's a justification. There's an argument for why a sentence should be higher. And the earlier case of Heilprin, the defendant simply said, should the probation office be allowed to write pre-sentence reports and make secret recommendations? And the answer was yes. Now, what's at issue here is, should the probation office be allowed to make an argument for why a sentence should be higher? Is that a secret? Is that a recommendation? I wouldn't have thought so until I heard Judge Zabel say this is what's in the secret report. I had no idea any such thing would be there. So Heilprin does not control this case. My next point would be that this kind of argument, secret argument, is exactly the kind of thing that needs to be responded to in sentencing in order to have a fair sentencing procedure. It's not new factual information, the court's correct, but it's a reason for a higher sentence. And arguments count. If you think about it, at sentencing, lawyers don't ever provide new factual information. All that's done ahead of time, through the PSR, through the sentencing submissions. In this case, there was interviews with people, letters, all those things. Those provide the factual underpinnings for a sentencing. What the lawyers do is make arguments, and they respond to arguments. And Rule 32 requires that both lawyers and the defendant be allowed to speak. And if the lawyers don't know what the arguments they're arguing against are, that's fundamentally a due process problem. And that's also the reason why we presented this as a Sixth Amendment issue as well.
Isn't this just a garden variety argument that is almost always in play with a fact pattern like this?
And
it's one of those equivocal arguments at best where the fact pattern, which is to say some reasonably positive aspects of the defendant's upbringing, might be construed as an aggravating factor or a mitigating factor, depending upon how they fit with the rest of the context of the case. I mean, that's a routine argument that's made when you see this sort of fact pattern.
I would say
and so, to the extent that there was any surprise at all, there should not have been.
I would say that there is. It was not a surprise. That there was in fact a surprise here. It is common for the argument to be made, Judge, look where he grew up. Is it surprising that he turned out this way? Now, whether that's taken as positive or negative, again, that's sort of anticipated.
Right, the converse is also
and sometimes
true.
You get somebody who, Rod Blagojevich, who has everything. And why would that person sink to this level? In the case of somebody whose father died at age 3, who grew up with a single mother and an alcoholic stepfather, to have this secret argument floating out there that says he came from a middle-class neighborhood and stayed out of trouble, therefore he is more culpable.
Why is that a secret argument if everybody knows the facts?
It wasn't in the PSR. It wasn't raised by the government in their argument.
But it's part of the factual background of the case to which everyone is privy. And so to the extent that it's either an aggravating or a mitigating factor, everybody's on notice that you might want to argue this.
There's more than I'd say there's more than the facts. I raised a hypothetical in my main brief where the what if the probation officer said that the person gestured with their glasses a lot and then included in the secret recommendation. In my experience, somebody who gestures with their glasses is generally a violent recidivist. It's only based upon facts.
Well, that seems to be a fact in several respects. One, the conduct of the gesturing, and then the opinion that a person who does that has that characteristic. And that's not what you're arguing. That's not. This is a perspective on the facts that are clearly in the record that is included in the PSR here. And that's quite different.
I think that there is a slippery. The distinction between facts and opinions is gray, and in this case, I was caught off guard. Mr. Peterson was caught off guard.
Speaking just to this case for a moment, didn't Judge Zagel state that he quoted you the before sentencing the relevant portions of this confidential report?
He did, and let me address that. If that was the court's intention, the court failed.
The
court failed.
I see.
If he was trying to create an opportunity to comment on something, the way you normally do that is by saying, do you have any comment on this? Or the probation officer says this, what do you say? It was a long stream of dialogue ending in, and therefore I'm imposing a sentence of 168 months.
So you feel that after his disclosure of the facts, you did not get an adequate opportunity?
Absolutely not.
Well, let's say for a second that is as you report it. After receiving those facts, would you have made an argument in this case other than what you made?
Yes, I would have made precisely the argument I did in my brief one in the second section here. I'm not going to, on page 31 of my brief, main brief, saying why there's a good counterargument, and that's what I would like the opportunity to do on remand in this case.
Is it altogether clear that the probation agent and the court considered this more positive aspect of the defendant's upbringing to be a negative?
No, because we only got half of the secret recommendation, but it sure seems that way.
Well, that's not enough to find reversible error.
Well,
especially on a plain error standard of review, which is what we've got here. If it's entirely unclear that the probation agent and the court considered this to be a substantial negative factor that drove the sentence, I mean, I don't, reading this transcript, see that. The judge said, oh, okay, on the one hand it can be positive, on the one hand it can be negative, mitigating, aggravating. I mean, he commented on it, but he didn't draw a conclusion one way or the other. At least I don't see one here.
We
I don't see him saying, I conclude that this factor warrants a higher sentence.
His quoted section ended with the words, on the one hand, the first hand of the defendant's life was positive, and this could be viewed as a mitigating factor. I am strongly inferring from that that there was a fairly devastating on the other hand following that. And the judge's sentence seemed to reflect that that's the way he viewed it. I see.
If these confidential recommendations are made in every case in the Northern District of Illinois, aren't they?
They are.
And other districts as well within the circuit?
Not necessarily other districts. I don't know about the other rest of the circuit. Across the country, it's a minority, I believe.
Right. But to the extent they are, then that if we were to decide this case in favor of your client, that would affect every case that's currently pending before the district courts and before our court that hasn't been decided yet?
I think it would, again, I'm litigating Ollie Peterson's case. I think it would require a change in approach.
If it's a Fifth or Sixth Amendment violation for him, it is for everyone, isn't it?
But whether there's prejudice in other cases is unclear. This case, the prejudice is fairly clear.
Well, you're suggesting it's maybe there. You're saying you're unable to conclude it's prejudice, isn't that right?
Fundamentally, you're asking me whether information that I don't know about affects me.
I don't mean to be unfair with the question. I'm just suggesting that in response to your dialogue with Judge Tender on the question of prejudice, you just think that there's the possibility exists, and therefore you'd like the opportunity to address it if it does exist.
In Mr. Peterson's case, it came out, I would say, plainly. In other cases, I can't say that because I have no idea what's in there. But the practice of having a secret recommendation, which may be mixed facts and opinions, that's not.
No, I understand the policy.
Your procedure.
All right.
I see my time is out.
I'll give you time for a rebuttal.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Garcia.
May it please the Court. The District Court did not commit error when it received the U.S. Probation Officer's confidential recommendation, considered it, in sentencing the defendant in this matter. The District Court received the U.S. Probation Officer's confidential recommendation. The District Court complied with Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure 32E3 and Local Criminal Rule 32.1F when it received and considered the confidential recommendation of the U.S. Probation Department. Local Criminal Rule Procedure 32.1F reflects a longstanding and commonly accepted practice in this circuit.
Well, so how commonly accepted do you think it is in this circuit?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Well, how commonly do you think it is in this circuit? There are 7 districts in this circuit. Do you know how many have this rule?
I do not, Your Honor.
Well, I think I can tell you that. I think just one other, Southern District of Illinois. So when you say commonly, 5 of the 7, according to my research, do not have this rule.
Your Honor, if I may, I believe the Southern District of Indiana also has a similar rule. Local Criminal Rule 13.1 on the sentence procedure, subsection C, the last sentence. The sentence recommendation provided to the court by the probation office will not be disclosed except to the court.
I think he's right about that.
Yeah, no, you're correct about that.
I apologize, Your Honor. I do not know about the Southern District of Illinois, however. Your Honor, in addition, existing case law in the Seventh Circuit also supports this practice in the Seventh Circuit. That considering the confidential report by the probation department as a recommendation to the district court is accepted. And not only in the Seventh Circuit, but also in the Fourth Circuit and Ninth Circuit as provided in evidence by case law in the government's brief. Lastly, in the instant case, the district court disclosed the confidential recommendation to the parties during sentencing and provided an opportunity to parties in order to comment on the district court.
So you dispute Mr. Hessler's representation that he did not have that opportunity?
That's correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, it's a longstanding rule in this district and the circuit that the recommendation would be confidential, at which time the defendant could have had an opportunity to object to that type of recommendation. During sentencing, the district court read from the confidential recommendation, giving the parties an opportunity to object. As the district court...
You say he gave an opportunity. So I just want to be clear, because I guess we'll have to check the transcript. But Mr. Hessler says the judge proceeded to sentencing without giving Mr. Hessler an opportunity to comment on what he had just disclosed from the confidential report.
The district court read that portion from the confidential recommendation at approximately page 14 and 15 of the transcript. Final sentencing wasn't provided until page 18. The district court's memorandum of opinion in response to the defendant's motion, post-trial motions, points that out to the parties in this case also, Your Honor. Your Honor, lastly, reasonable minds may disagree regarding the policy considerations on the confidential recommendation to the district court and whether the confidential recommendation should be provided to the parties. However, those policy considerations do not rise to the level of a constitutional violation in this instance. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, we'd ask that the court affirm the sentence of the defendant for the reasons stated in the brief and in argument.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Mr. Hessler, you may have 2 minutes.
With respect of whether compliance with local rules shields this constitutionally, my mother always said something like, if everyone else was jumping off a bridge, does that mean you should too? And I think it goes with throwing people off bridges also. I don't think there's necessarily protection in doing what others have done when a lot of the country doesn't see that as fair. With respect to whether there was an opportunity to rebut here, which really controls the standard review, and that's the point here, the judge did read half of the secret recommendation. It's unclear what the other half. The judge, it's not clear that the judge was aware that he was providing a secret recommendation. He said on page 23, line 528, one had to flip into the PSR to realize that, wait a minute, ours ends at page 21. That he's somewhere else. He then tossed the idea around saying, on the one hand, there's this. So it was unclear where he was using it, and it ended up directly in, therefore, I'm imposing 168 months. There was no point at where you could say, oh, this is what the judge is doing, therefore, it is the time to object. Also, this entire discussion happened after the judge had said, defense, anything you want to say, and government, anything you want to say, and defendant, now if you want to say anything, this is the time to do it. After that was all done is when this entire thing happened. It's our position that that does not constitute an opportunity to object. If there's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hessler.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Case taken.